Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I'm so excited to introduce you to the wonderful woman that we have for you today. Her name is Stephanie Winfrey, and she is a full-time psychotherapist at a private practice. Stephanie, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Brooke. I'm so excited.
Well, I know we're excited to dive into all the wealth of knowledge that you have to share with our university age students. But before we get into all of those nitty gritty details, give us some insight and some background into who you are.
Well, Brooke, I have almost 30 years of experience in the behavioral health world and starting out with child welfare. I've worked in crisis intervention. I've worked in school-based therapy. And, you know, my primary background is in mental illness and substance use, as well as co-occurring disorders. After a while, they all kind of blend together because the recidivism of the shared population is just really uncanny. So I clump it all together as behavioral health work. In addition, I've been an adjunct instructor for Wilmington University in Delaware for about almost 15 years.
Wow. One thing you said before we got started that really, really stuck out to me is that one thing you notice with someone transitioning into university age is that if they've been suffering to mask something, whether that be anxiety, whether that be OCD, whether that be symptoms or beginnings of depression, that becomes very pronounced in university. Why do you think that is?
It's almost kind of taboo still in this day, sadly, in 2024 to talk about mental health issues, and students still feel the need to hide those types of things because maybe they feel they'll be discriminated upon about the education that they're able to receive, or maybe it'll draw unnecessary attention to them in some kind of way, or maybe it will suggest that they're not able to succeed. So I think that that's one of the things that stands in the way.
So with someone that has been sort of, as you say, masking something, whether that's, you know, obsessive tendencies or anxiety, what did that look like to mask that behavior and intentionally try to draw attention away from it?
Well, for example, for students who may present with symptoms early on, like maybe for a year or so before they even go to school, a couple of years before they go to school, maybe even since childhood, because we're finding now the more serious forms of mental illness, the onset of it is sometimes maybe as early as elementary school age now, whereas the old mindset or traditional paradigm of thinking about onset for mental illness would start anywhere between 12 to 18 years of age and peak until maybe about 27, age 27. So, you know, sometimes they would mask symptoms by avoiding auditory hallucinations or visual hallucinations, or minimizing losing time, being disoriented, issues of being experiencing depersonalization, things, or just feeling disconnected with what's going on in the present moment and not really feeling comfortable to share that with anybody. Maybe drastic personality changes that's within a norm. For example, if the person's really a social person and all of a sudden becomes a social recluse or chooses to isolate and is often sad and doesn't really like to do anything outdoors. So those are the kind of things that would be helpful for them to be avoided and not drawing attention to the things, because I guess the mindset would be, you know, if I'm around people, people are going to pick up on something being wrong. And then if people are constantly around me, they're going to monitor me. And then they might force me to do something like go to a treatment provider or see crisis attention. And I definitely don't want to do that. And so the problem just continues until, you know, unfortunately, it reaches sometimes the full point of crisis.
And I can see how that would be very dangerous when you're living alone for the first time. You don't have your mom or your parent or your guardian to really look after your well-being. That becomes scary. What does that look like to be on your own, right? If you've been suffering and masking?
Well, that can feel very, very overwhelming, and that can trigger, you know, a major traumatic response. Some kids, you know, everybody is very individual when it comes to our upbringings, right? Some of us have helicopter parents. Some of us have parents that are completely hands-off. You know, if I show you how to do something, then that means you know how to do it, and you do it for yourself. You're going to wake yourself up. You're going to wash your own clothes. You're going to fix your own food. And then you have the kids that are completely dependent on parents or mommy and daddy or auntie and uncle or grandmom and grandpa for everything. And so when you have that autonomous ability to go to school and do whatever you want to do, when you want to do it, nobody really checking over you, sometimes it will help some students that have been, you know, irresponsible get it together to become more responsible. And sometimes it has the extreme opposite effect where, well, nobody's going to find out. I'm here. You only live once. Let's party and go to class. So that could be very problematic. And then all of a sudden, I'm failing everything. I have my academic advisors blowing up my email and my phone. Parents are constantly calling me, asking me how I'm doing. And I have to, you know, keep track of the lies that I'm telling about me going to class and how well I'm doing and stuff. And then it all becomes too much and the world kind of crumbles down. And then they're forced with, hey, I have to make a decision. One, possibly to get some help to address some of these mental health issues that I'm experiencing, but also academically, maybe to get some support too and let a whole bunch of people know what's going on and build myself a support team. And like I said earlier, before we started the podcast, I think colleges are doing a better job at trying to help students to be more aware and proactive in addressing problems like that. But sometimes some of those counseling services on campus aren't really equipped to deal with more chronic and severe forms of mental illness.
Mm-hmm. And that becomes problematic. One thing I'd love your opinion on is we often describe going away to university as you're going to feel a little bit of homesickness, perhaps a little bit of discomfort, right? But for people with significant mental health challenges, it could be much more than that. And I don't think we speak to that enough.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can remember my experience of being a resident assistant many moons ago. I mean, the college life, I'm sure, is very different now, but I can remember having freshmen who would just have full meltdowns for the first month of school and not wanting to stay and trying to convince them to want to stay. And unfortunately, either they would give in and go home and just withdraw for the semester, or they would get caught up with the wrong people and things and activities and become the social butterflies early on too early and not go to class and do what they needed to do. So homesickness is a very real thing, and it can be very, 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 very overwhelming and cause some mental distress, especially if there are certain circumstances at home. You know, a lot of these students who come to school have families that are very dependent upon them. They have a lot of pressure on them to succeed. Maybe they are that identified kid in the family that's expected to succeed. I see a lot of cultural and ethnic issues when it comes to that. Like, I have a diverse population of counseling clients right now. We have the world on our shoulders. I see a lot of students who are pre-med. I see a lot of nursing students, and their families are depending on them to be high achievers, to make the money, to come back home and support, you know, mom and dad, and also their younger siblings. So there's a lot of pressure on these students and stuff. And the homesickness is not only I have to succeed, but also what if I don't succeed? And also I feel guilty because I'm away from home, and who's really taking care of home from because I'm here at school. So there's so many factors that play into students being emotionally unwell.
One thing I loved is you bring up the cultural and ethnic differences. Can you expand upon a little bit of that in terms of feeling this responsibility and weight to make it all work, to be the person that always figures everything out?
Right. Well, I've had some real specific clients that were really situations where, you know, their scenario is really tough at the heart, and you're hearing their stories and think to yourself, my goodness, like some of the things that some of these students have been through by the time they were 10 were things that the average 36-year-old or 40 or 50-year-old couldn't imagine, like leaving their family because their country's possibly at some kind of war, and the parents choosing to send them across the seas for a better education and for safety so that they don't have to be there to sustain a civil war in their country. And then not only that, you know, when they do go across the world to these special schools, they're in top-notch schools and they're expected to succeed because they need to become the caretakers of the family. And so eventually their destinies or their fates are kind of predestined based on what the family is, you know, priming them to do in terms of education. So if they're putting them in finest boarding schools, then 9 times out of 10, they're expected to enter into some kind of STEM program or some kind of field, science field, where they're going to succeed. 9 times out of 10, it has to do with what? Medicine. They're the ones that are primed to be the nurses and the doctors and things of that nature. And I just can't imagine having to leave your family, you know, early on, and then living with strangers, having to figure out, you know, this thing called life and how to take care of yourself and have the responsibility. You must succeed. So a lot of mental unwellness is derived from, you know, our life conditioning, pre-genetic dispositioning, because that just means that, you know, that seed is planted long before, you know, we're a twinkle in mommy and dad's eyes, that there's a 50-50 chance or some kind of percentage that we may have some kind of mental health issue. And there's nothing that we can really do about it except to get the help that we need and to just be aware.
What you're saying about cultural, I had a really amazing conversation a few weeks ago with a young lady who came from Asia to the UK and, you know, did her master's and she's pursuing her doctorate. And she talked a lot about the transition and how it felt to transition from Asian culture to a more Western UK culture and just how different that was. And as you're describing these students, I cannot imagine the culture transition.
I cannot. And the maturity that they have. I've worked with other, you know, family members that are always in the most difficult school programs. I'm thinking to myself, and then what's really frustrating and sad to hear as a therapist, because I also have experience as an adjunct instructor, is to hear that often the students are disconnected with the programs that they're studying or the field of studies, and they're prompted or pushed in that field of study because of what the family members want. And they have no interest in the field. And they're going to be paying a lot of money back in student loans to be disconnected from the job. And the other sad part about all this, not only will they be in financial debt when they graduate, but 9 times out of 10, and I say this a lot, and I'm not saying anything original because I know you've heard this a lot too, 9 times out of 10, these students will have to create positions and be innovative in creating the positions that they desire to work in the fields that they're studying for, and especially for those who are interested in it. You know, it's great that you want to study what, you know, soil looks like in rare areas and stuff, and that you want to, you know, put it on display at a museum and stuff. But ideally, what does that look like in terms of securing a job and full-time employment? And as a parent, that sounds great dear, but like, how is that going to translate in terms of income, right? And so you're going to have to be innovative in creating a position for you to do, or become an entrepreneur, or just become independently wealthy, right? And all this can have to do that level or that need to succeed, which can really, really play into, you know, the mental unwellness piece of all of this. Oh, if I don't succeed, if this doesn't work out, then what am I going to do? And then if you have to start over again, that's devastating as well too, to explore, you know, other options. But there's also no failure in that, because I see it all the time. I know of 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds who still don't know what they want to do with their life. And to ask a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old what they want to do with their lives for the rest of their lives, I think it's a bit unrealistic.
If you could say three pieces of advice, they can be anything. They can be tangible, physical, emotional, mental. Three pieces of advice or three things you want university students to know. What are those three things?
Help is available for whatever issues they're going through. And they also need to understand that not only is help available, but you're essentially paying for that to some degree. Most colleges, like I said earlier, they do a pretty good job at having some kind of counseling center. Some are better than others. Some service like a Band-Aid effect. We'll address it. We'll put the Band-Aid on it. And then it's pretty much up to the student to follow up. Always talk to their parents or whoever's responsible for helping them with insurance, or if they have their own insurance, being aware of what their behavioral health providers are. If their parents insured them, touching base with their parents to know who their EAP programs are, which can be very instrumental, and just simply, you know, telling them, okay, you are about 5 minutes away from this provider while you're going to school, especially if the student is out of state or even out of the country, just being able to identify resources like that. And then also stay as socially active as you can and connected with, you know, people, even if you're the biggest introvert ever, because again, the college experience is very much interdependent on the social aspect of learning. I'm a big believer in the social learning model that we tend to learn from the world and others. It's really necessary for us to be connected to other people in order for us to grow and to learn new things. And if we stay isolated, unfortunately, we become like islands all by ourselves. I mean, every now and then there needs to be some congruency between, you know, this thing called reality and our own world, or else we just stay stuck in our own world. And sometimes if we have mental health issues, our thoughts tend to lie to us in the moment and tell us everything but the truth, right? And it keeps us further disconnected. So I hope that made some sense. I hope that answered your question.
No, that was beautiful. And to your last point, we have to challenge some of those invasive thoughts, right? Because they're not always right, just because they seem right in the moment. And I had somebody say to me, thoughts are a little bit like clouds. You got to wait for them to pass sometimes. And I thought that was beautiful.
Sometimes we have to help them pass them.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Now, I have another question for you. Is there a quote or is there something that you live your life by that you want to share with us?
I would say when it comes to people having a hard time, which, you know, obviously the work that I do, I deal with that a lot. This too shall pass. I am a very spiritual person. I'm a godly woman. My greatest intervention is my higher being, that of Jesus Christ. So that is where I draw my strength from and everything. And so this too shall pass, you know, this is just a part of, you know, your destiny, your fate, your story is already recorded. At least that's what my belief is. And, you know, you're meant to go through these challenges and things of that nature. But, you know, I believe that my higher power has a plan to help you with whatever you go through, because he already knows your story. And so this too shall pass, to say that is so freeing, because just like my mindfulness therapeutic intervention that I practice on a regular basis, that just reminds me, it's very godly and reminded me that at this moment, it's just this moment. And we're going to get another moment if it's meant for us to see the next moment. So we only have to be committed to doing whatever we need to do in this moment when things get to be really heavy. We only have to get to the next minute. That's why they call the present a gift, right? I think that sounds so cliche, because this moment truly is a gift. It's the present. It really is a gift. We never get it back.
My sister calls that do the next right thing.
That's awesome.
So as we wrap up, is there any parting words you want to say that you didn't get a chance to share that you really feel passionate about sharing as we end our episode, which has been fabulous?
Well, no, I just appreciate you for, you know, putting this ad on Facebook. You know, I'm trying to get myself out there to talk about these things that I'm passionate about. And if it wasn't for opportunities like this, I wouldn't be able to share my piece. I think that there are so many other people like myself out there that have so many things that they want to share. Unfortunately, like me, if you don't really know where to grab those opportunities, you know, things like this will never happen. So I thank you for this experience. And it wasn't by chance. It was meant to be.
Oh, I'm excited that you took your time and your energy and your effort and were able to share that with us today. We are so grateful and we are so appreciative of everything you shared. I felt that I walked away and learned something, and I know our students are going to feel the same way. So Stephanie, thank you for joining me on another episode of the Campus Chronicles podcast.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.